They say it's in your blood, a game that can't be won, only played. A love affair. It satisfies the soul and frustrates the intellect. The greatest game ever played, golf. It's real. And this is Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper, son of legendary golfer Billy Casper, talking golf with you for more than two decades. And now, here's Brian and Bob.
Thank you very much. And again, it's the Masters Preview Edition of Real Golf Radio, and it's such a pleasure to have you along wherever you are accessing the show. Thank you so much for being a part of it. Bob Casper, son of 1970 Masters champion Billy Casper. I'm Brian Taylor. So good to be with you. We got a lot to talk about. We're going to spend some time going over the golf course and the holes, right, and what makes them difficult and how they rank and how they're played and some of the strategy, and the caddy is going to join us for that discussion. We're going to welcome in Tony Finau, who is competing in his seventh Masters. He's made the cut in all six previous. He has three top tens. He played in the final group with Tiger in 2019 when Tiger won his fifth green jacket. So there is a lot to get to coming up here on Real Golf Radio and a Masters Preview Edition. We're really excited. Plus, the anatomy of a Masters champion. What does a Masters champion look like? What age? How many attempts before their first win, their second win, third win, so on and so forth? And then where are they in position after each round? The wonderful thing about the Masters is being played at Augusta National every year, you've got historical data to be able to draw from and say, you know what, if you want to be in this prestigious club, the Masters Club, as a champion, here's kind of what you need to do. And here's some outliers, by the way. Yes, we know, yeah, Nick Faldo was seven back. We know there are some guys that have made runs, but typically this is where you got to be to play the weekend. This is where you need to be to set yourself up to win a green jacket on Sunday. So we're going to get into all of that as well.
Yeah. And another thing that is crazy about the Masters is you have to putt extremely well at Augusta, and most of the guys that win the golf tournament maybe only have one three putt or not even a three putt the whole week. And the scores, individual scores they make, you know, not a lot of guys make double bogeys that win the Masters, that kind of thing. So you really got to keep things under check, and keep your game at it in check as you're playing and dealing with those feelings and everything that go along with it.
And you need to get off to a good start. Let's not underestimate how important that is, especially for guys like Rory McIlroy. We'll talk about some of the favorites as well as we go through this. And our picks. Stay tuned. It's all coming up. We're just getting started here. It's a Masters Preview Edition right here on Real Golf Radio.
Now, back to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
Welcome in again. Thanks for joining us on our Masters Preview Edition of Real Golf Radio. It's time to welcome in America's favorite caddy.
There are bag rats, and then there are caddies. Baby. Pro jocks who are legends in caddy shacks across the PGA Tour.
While we can neither confirm nor deny the existence of this legendary looper,
here he is, the caddy on Real Golf Radio.
Yeah, the caddy joins us weekly on Real Golf Radio, and this is always a special time. The caddy, I'm sure, with memories of his 20-some years, 30 years, whatever, caddying out on the PGA Tour, many of the fondest involve wearing the Augusta coveralls with a name on the back, walking the hallowed grounds of Augusta National. Caddy, am I right or am I right?
You are, you're so right, you're right of right. Just saying. So one thing, the first thing that popped into my head when you were giving that little intro about the Masters was one time when my player shot 77 the first round and we played early the next day. I was walking in, Bob, that's when we parked over to the right of the second tee.
Oh, I know,
parking, yep, right over there. You walked in on that little dirt road or whatever. And so I'm walking in and the sun's coming up, and look, Augusta National is like the Grand Canyon. I don't care how well you describe it. I don't care how over the top you are in your description of it. When you go see it for the first time, it's better than you think it's going to be. You can't overdo it. right? I mean, it's just, it's that kind of a place. So I'm walking, it's just beautiful. Sun's coming up. It's a perfect, a little bit chilly in the morning, you know, a little bit of dew. It's just perfect. And I remember as I walked across that road, I actually invoked the divine powers. I said, God, please let us make this cut. I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily appropriate to pray that you're going to make a cut, but I'm just telling you the facts as they were at the time. That's what I did.
I don't think it's inappropriate to pray to miss the
cut. It's not. And did you make the cut?
I mean, and we did. We, I think we missed by one.
Oh, man, that must have been a trial of your faith at that point.
My Daddy, player made seven.
You were just talking
my
about
player made 17. Sorry.
No, oh, I was going to say story. you were just talking about a perfect morning and seeing it and unless you've been there, you have no idea. My dad took a really good friend of his and his wife one time to the Masters for the week. It was a guy they played a lot of golf with in San Diego. Little Italian guy, always talked with his hands and very emotional and that kind of thing. My dad takes him out the back of the clubhouse under the oak tree, and they walk out and he sees the golf course for the first time and he just started bawling.
Yeah.
So my just first, started crying.
You have Ray Floyd saying one time on the first tee, he looked down and his pants were flapping in the wind, and then he realized that there wasn't any wind. He was just shaking. And Jack one time hit it in the bunker. Yeah, after he'd won a couple times, he hit it in the bunker off the tee. And in the interview after the round, they said, what happened on that first tee shot of the bunker? And he said, I just got caught up and forgot what I was doing. Jack Nicklaus said that.
Wow.
The first time I was out there, the first day I was out there was Sunday prior to the Monday of tournament week, and there's nobody out there. And my player wanted to play a practice round without anybody there just to kind of get in, you know. And so we're on the first tee, and he takes a couple waggles and looks up at me, and he says, I'm nervous. I mean, there's nobody there. Literally nobody there. Nobody there. And then he takes this big old divot on the first hole, and he throws it back to me. He says, put that in the bag. I'm going to take it back home and plant it in my front yard.
There you go.
You know how many people have tried that, including yours truly? Bob, do you remember that first year I grabbed that divot and I put it in the zip? I thought, okay, how do I best keep this sucker alive? So I put it in a Ziploc bag, punched some holes in it, spritzed it with water every day. That thing was so nasty by the end of the week. It did not make it into a carry-on.
Moldy.
Oh, it was so bad. But I efforted. I tried.
How about Paul Stankowski? The first time he played at Augusta, he hit it into the bunker on in a practice round on the 18th hole, and he pulled the little Ziploc bag out of his golf bag and put sand in it and zipped it up and took it home with him because he didn't ever think he was going to get back again.
So here's what Paul Stankowski didn't know. When you're in Hawaii, you don't take any lava rock with you off the islands because you're going to be visited and cursed by the spirits for 17 years.
That's right.
And that's what happened. Brian, it's a good thing you didn't take that divot home because you never would have won any of those tournaments that you won.
Oh, right.
Because you haven't passed the 17-year threshold yet. You'd still be in purgatory. So you don't want to do that. Oh, I think I heard a story of someone who took their drink cup and scooped up some sand, like leaving the course, some patron, and I think they took his ticket.
If they saw that,
I don't doubt
that.
They would. Absolutely.
Yep, you're out of here. Never come back. Thank you. I don't know. You know, this is where you don't want the truth getting in the way of some stories because there's some good ones. And
there's some really good ones.
Yeah.
David Green. How about when your caddy said to you on the 18th hole?
His player,
that you don't smell too good about now when you had that coverall on.
Right. I was going to bring that up as the second thing that came into my mind after praying to make the cut. That's actually the second thing that flashed into my mind was that comment on 18.
So remind me, you said your player made 17 pars. Is that what you're about to say on the second round?
Yeah. So this was the year that Matt Kuchar played well as an amateur and was smiling at everybody.
And, yeah.
so he, it was a difficult day, the first day. And my player made 17 pars and shot 77.
Oh, yikes.
Wait.
As our Canadian friends would say, as our Canadian listeners would say, oh, hey, made a moose. If you're wondering what a moose is, open up your hands like you're going to give a high five and put your thumbs on your temples. That's a moose. No kidding.
Where did he make 10? Where did he make 10?
I'm on 15. I'm playing in a Canadian.
I was going to say.
15?
Way back
when. Had to hit a couple in the water.
Oh, I'll go through the shot by shot if you'd like.
I would like.
But the moose story is kind of cool. I was playing in a Canadian tour event. I had a week off. I went up, flew up all the way from Orlando to Vancouver Island. Played in the qualifier. Got in a playoff. I'm playing with a dude. And he makes a big number. He's a Canadian guy. And makes a big number. And you hate asking. I got his card. So I got to ask him, what'd you make? And you don't want to do that, right? But I have to. And that's when he threw the moose at me. He goes, oh, I made a moose, eh? I'm like, what? And he holds up the antlers and it's a 10. And I mean, that almost fell down. So 15th hole. Yeah. 15th hole. Pins left. Sort of front leftish. And there's two different places you can lay up on 15. Some guys like to go down the left and shoot right at it to the back of the green. And some people like to go way to the right and hit a wedge that runs way down the green to get to the hole. So there's kind of two strategies, and you'll see both of them employed. The safe one is to go way right because you kind of take the water out of play, but it's hard to get it close from that angle. Anyhow, my player lays up down the left side a little bit, and we're discussing the shot. And you want to throw it to the back of the green because you know it's going to spin a little bit. And so he hits the shot, and it's beautiful. It lands middle of the green. It bounces to the back. It checks. And it's coming back to the hole like the speed of a putt. And I'm going to get the divot. And I pick up the divot, and I look up at the ball. I'm watching the ball. It may have burned the edge of the hole. It looked like it was going to go in. It's going to be an eagle. And it's going snail's pace. And I turn around, and I'm like, how good was that shot? I turn around, and I'm walking. I take about 5 steps, and I hear, oh, and I'm like, turn back around. And sure enough, it had trickled at a snail's pace all the way back to the front of the green, agonizingly mocking us, and then went into the water. I am thinking, you got to be kidding me. So now look, I might be exaggerating a little bit. Maybe it had a little more pace than that, but this is how I remember it.
Of course.
So we took a drop and he hit the big ball before the little ball on the next one. And it didn't even get over the pond. Ugh. You know where this one's going, Bob, you know where the next one's going.
Well,
you're thinking, don't hit it over the green on the water, right? We know it's going over the green. Just don't hit it down into the pond on 16 now. And so he hits it over the green. Anyway, he makes a 10. But I will say this. I'm not sure that was the only 10 that day. I know that somebody like Watson and I think Payne Stewart made 8s, 7s, 8s, and 9s on that hole. So it wasn't just us. And I heard that they actually soften that green. They flatten that green for the next tournament.
What year was that?
Well, it was probably 94. All maybe right, 95.
I'll look it up and see. We got to take a quick break. We'll come back. Caddy, I want to go through that hole and the strategy, but I want to hit all of them as well. We're just getting started. It's the Masters Preview Edition of Real Golf Radio.
You're listening to Real Golf Radio. Talking golf with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
One day you'll get it.
Here's Brian and Bob.
All right, welcome back to our Masters Preview Edition of Real Golf Radio. Continuing now with America's favorite caddy. By the way, according to the official media guide, the 15th hole did not have any green alterations to it around the time in which you alluded. So just in case you were wondering, officially, nothing was changed on the 15th green.
As far as
you
know.
I'm going to give an opinion on that.
Okay.
And I'm going to say that when asked about whether the 15th green was altered. The official spokesman said, I can either confirm or deny any of those allegations.
That's right. That's right.
I can tell you, though, in 2022, the Masters tees were moved back 20 yards and the fairway was recontoured. So there you go. All right. So Bob, kind of, you can't see Bob Caddy because the way we've got this set up, but Bob sort of stood back in his chair and he wasn't liking what you said about the two strategies of playing 15 as far as trying to get it down there to the water. So maybe you can, Bob, take him to task on that one, or maybe you can sort of reconfirm what you were saying there, Caddy, on 15.
Caddy,
well, so,
a former Masters champion that I know.
You know him well.
I know him really well. He said, always lay up down to the left because it's a flatter lie and you're hitting up into the green instead of over to the right where you're on a downhill lie and you can do what your player did on his second try trying to go across the pond.
So, see, that was my preference on that hole, was to do just that for those reasons, and even expanding a little bit. It's a downhill lie with the ball above your feet.
Yeah.
And the thing that's wild about Augusta, and you really have to actually be walking on the fairways during the tournament to appreciate this, they mow the fairways from green to tee only. They come right at you, and the grain is into you just a little bit, even though it's an overseed. The grass lays towards you just a little bit, which means there is no margin for error for hitting that ball crisp. If you just barely get behind it, it magnifies the chunkiness of that shot.
Yep.
So it is easy to lay the sod over it at Augusta National on a wedge shot. Let's just put it that way. And so that's what your dad was saying.
What he was saying.
And no question, it's flatter down the left. I mean, it's almost a dead flat lie, as I remember.
Yeah.
And
that's correct.
It's a straightforward, simple shot. And I mean, I don't think I'm sitting there thinking we did nothing wrong here. What just happened? I mean, nothing wrong. We did everything perfectly.
It's a fine line.
Yeah, look, that's golf. You know, no good shots will go unpunished.
There you go. So hole 15, known as Firethorn, it's par 5, 550 yards long. Last year, it was the 16th easiest. Second, third easiest hole, 16th most difficult hole. Cumulatively, that's the same as well. So scoring average last year, 4.6. For the tournament, 4.776. So this is 13 and 15 are ones you got to get after. Is there anybody that doesn't hit driver on that? And how far do you need to hit it to get into the go zone? Or what is the decision for laying up? At what yardage do you have to kind of reconsider whether you go for that green in two?
So we're talking 15. I can't imagine in the history of that golf tournament, no one has ever not hit a driver off that tee. Okay. No one. 100%. Not at any time. I'd almost make a bet on that. How crazy is that? But there's no reason not to hit anything but a driver. So that's number one there. So laying up, well, here's the thing. It's situation specific. For example, if I'm into the wind and closer to the green, it's easier to go for it sometimes because the wind can cushion it. How firm is the green? If the green's really firm and I'm coming in with lumber, I'm really bringing that pond on 16 into play behind the green. So I may lay up even though I can get there. If it's firm and it's into the wind, I may go for it with a 3-wood because it's going to cushion the landing. So it's really situation specific. Nowadays, even when I caddied there in the early 90s, there were definitely times when guys were firing 4-irons in there.
Yeah.
Question. I remember I went out and watched Fred Couples play the last 3 holes the year he won. He hit it left, my memory serves me right, he hit it left on 15. Let's play the last 4 holes, obviously. And he had, those trees were in his way. And you have to hit a big hook, and he pulled out a 7-iron and hit a big hook on the green in 2. that year he won, if my memory serves me right.
Wow.
So that was back in 19, what was that, 92?
92.
I think.
Yep. Yeah, he had to turn it down and do a sling hook in there.
Yep, and he had a beautiful shot. And, so that hole had mid and short irons to it since way back when. And it's much longer now, but everybody hits it much longer. So, yeah, the go zone really depends. It's so situation specific, not just can I do it and should I do it, but where's my position in the tournament, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's what's fun about caddying. But there's, I mean, you've got all these decisions, and there's not, you can take all this data that people do now and say, oh, you should always get as close to the green, or you should always be, nobody in professional golf plays like that. It's situation specific, always, on the decision.
Yep.
Caddy joining us here on Real Golf Radio. So let's just start from the beginning. Opening tee shot, hole number one, tee olive. It's a par four, 445 yards. It was the seventh most difficult hole last year. Averages over the tournament is six. So this is a good one right out the gate, huh, Caddy?
All right, so number one, right?
Yeah.
Are we there?
Yeah.
Yep.
I was thinking, number one was one of the more benign holes, and then they put the tee way back, and all of a sudden it became a monster. It used to be guys would hit drivers three woods off of there because it was a dogleg right, and there's a general right to left slope in the fairway, so it's tough to keep it in the fairway if you hit it a little longer. It tend to run down into the left trees there. But way back when, in the early 90s when I was there, you'd hit driver 7, 8 iron, 9 iron. And that green is kind of designed to accommodate a 7 iron or less. Then when they put the tees back, unless you're a bomber, you can be on that upslope short of the bunker. The bunker's like 300 something to reach now from the back of that back tee, I think. That's a long way. And yeah, you can be on an upslope with a 4 iron now coming into that hole. And it's like, wow, this green's not designed to accommodate this shot. And it can be almost semi-blind if you're a shorter hitter. So
yeah,
that hole, it was always a difficult putting surface to deal with. It wasn't the hardest tee shot. It was actually, for that course, it was a tougher tee shot, tighter tee shot than most of them. But it wasn't that bad. But the approach shot was, you had to put it in the right place big time. And there's all kinds of problems around. You hit it long left. You hit it like middle of the green. You hit it long enough to get center of the green back to the left. It's going down that swoop, Bob, and that's just dead over
that's
the
right
left there.
Yeah,
that's
I've been over almost, there before.
Right. Everybody's from been my there. Dad. Everybody's been there. But you'll notice if you watch on TV, almost no one ever misses that green left over there. Because yeah, that's the worst place to miss that green. But you got that pin on the back right shelf. How hard is that? You got to hit it 20 short and then and make a good two putt, right? I mean,
yep,
it's just that hole. We could talk about that hole for an hour with different pin play. Guys putted in the sand for the front left pin placement. Guys have putted it into the bunker with their front left pin placement by hitting it.
Especially
in the middle of the green.
when they're like you said, when they're mid of the green and further back, and coming from the right side, putting towards that front left pin placement.
So fast and so much more downhill than everybody's seen. Or maybe it's because it's the first hole and you don't have your putting feel or nerves quite locked in yet, and you put it in the bunker.
Is this is this where we bring up Ernie Els in 2016 when he made nine?
So I did a bad thing. I probably shouldn't have done this. His caddy at the time, I've known forever. And Ernie just basically was just, it was a combination of quick hit and yips all together. And I think, was he missing every single one, either right or left. I can't remember.
You're right. Was either right or left?
No. I think he missed them all
in Army golf.
No, I think he missed them all in the same direction though, because I remember texting his caddy. I felt bad about this, but I couldn't resist. I said, "Hey, you should have told your man to aim a little more left on all those putts."
Oh.
But
Ernie made a nine in 2016.
How about John Rahm?
He four-putted, right? He made double there and won.
He
Yeah.
They made an ugly double on the side of tee times where he had the worst tee times on a time when it really mattered. And he was dominating winning that tournament.
He's the only champion that has actually won by doubling the first hole. Maybe it's right up there. There's maybe one other. Interestingly enough, before we leave number one, there have been five twos made at number one. Frank Moore back in 1940, Roberto De Vincenzo in 68. Oh man, Takaki Kono, is that right? In 1970, the year your dad won. Scott Verplank in 87 and Retief Goosen most recently in 2011. Holdout for Eagle there. So there you go. That's number one.
That's not many twos on a par four for the history of a tournament. I would have thought more than 10 for sure.
Yeah, no.
But that's how hard that approach shot is.
Yeah.
That's how hard the shot is. Yeah.
Bob's giving me that we got to take a break. Caddy, we'll do so. We're going to run through. We've only hit 15 and one. There's a few more holes we got to get through, and we're running out of time. So we're going to move this along when we come back right here on Real Golf Radio.
Now, back to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
Thanks again for joining us here on Real Golf Radio, brought to you in part by Black Desert Resort. Go get yourself down to blackdesertresort.com and check out the all-new Tom Weisskopf Championship Design Golf Course, the accommodations that are coming this fall when the PGA Tour makes a FedEx Cup fall appearance in October the 10th through the 13th at Black Desert Resort. You can still own a piece of real estate by signing up and getting your information at blackdesertresort.com. It's going to be a phenomenal place. They were just putting, Bob, all the palm trees in and around the Oasis, which is the restaurant out on the golf course sitting adjacent to the 11th tee box. So when you come off a 10, your food will already have been ordered. You can pick it up right there. There's a reason they call it the Oasis. Rooftop dining. They've got palm trees coming that are planted in the ground coming up through the roof with rooftop dining sitting around it. It's spectacular. It's up on a kind of a peak there. Really great views. 15th green is adjacent there. 11th tee, 16th green behind you. Really, really cool stuff. So yeah, be a part of it. Check out blackdesertresort.com for more details. And we're continuing with America's favorite caddy. And I hate to bring up, the guys, Rom, four putting, Ernie five putting, I believe is what it was in 2016. But let's go on to number two. Number two is a dog leg left, par five, and this is one where you can, get after it. In fact, it was the last hole to have a double eagle on it, if I'm not mistaken, when Louis did that a couple years ago is all, right? Holes out. So this is Pink Dogwood, 585 yards, par five. Last year was the easiest hole on the golf course, averaging 4.637. What's the key to number two, Bob? Caddy.
Well, with the new tee, it takes it back about 10 yards, but pushes it over to the left a little bit. So it actually opens up the fairway just a little bit more if you're going to be hitting a driver off the tee.
A draw.
Or a draw with a driver or 3 wood off the tee. But what it does is it makes it tougher off the tee for a guy that's going to hit a fade because now the trees sneak out into the fairway a little bit more. Caddy?
And a lot of guys fade it with the driver now. But no, that's putting it to the left probably makes that a little easier just because you're hitting more away from that creek, which is the big no-no. You don't want to hit that pull hook there. That's double bogey territory. But it's hard to reach that bunker on some days now, but a lot of guys, when it's playing shorter, they're really bombing it. They can get it down that hill and have an iron in there. So that's definitely a hole. You're absolutely thinking four. You don't like ever walking off that hole with a five. It's definitely a birdie hole. Unless you really hit a big pool hook, there's kind of no trouble on it. And yeah, it's a benign. It'd probably be nicer if that was the first hole because it's so much easier than number one. Number one's just so hard to start on, and then you're nervous. But yeah, I mean, two's fun. Two's fun. You look at your chops when you get to the second tee.
Number three, Flowering Peach. It's a short par four, just 350 yards. It played the 13th toughest hole last year. Average scoring average 4.036. Your thoughts on this one? This is obviously over the years, it feels like the players have evolved into bashing it up there, and it kind of depends on where the pin placement is, but hitting it up there long, close to the green, and then just having that chip up the hill versus laying back near the bunkers and having more of a full shot. What do you think?
Can be a little tricky to the front pins, more so the front left. When you drive it way up there, you're typically down at the bottom of the hill, coming way uphill to a 35, 40 yard shot. It's tricky and difficult, that front left pin. The back pin, yeah. Back pin, just take it up there, send it. You got a ton of green to work with. The front right pin, a little better angle for that second shot if you take it way up there, but it seems like that plays kind of tricky too, more than you'd think it would. But guys, you still definitely see guys lay up there. I would watch what Tiger does there. I wouldn't be surprised at all if him hitting irons off that tee.
It's kind of situational also, depending on where the flag is and that kind of thing.
Well, every single shot we're going to discuss is situational on weather, wind, firmness of green. That's the thing, right? I mean, there's a general strategy, but you do different things given different conditions, no question.
It's also a great spot if you want to spectate, being right there on the third green. You can also see him hit down four. It's just a really nice spot from a spectator standpoint. You're up high looking down.
Yep.
Let's go to number four. This one, I thought this was pretty interesting, Caddy. The fourth hole, it's a 240-yard par three. At least it can play that long. They have different tees there. It ranked fifth last year in most difficult holes at 3.216 scoring average. Cumulatively, it's third. The third toughest hole at Augusta is the par three fourth. What's your thoughts and what makes this so difficult?
So I'm not surprised about the fifth ranking, the third ranking a little bit, but I'm not surprised it's that hard. I was going to say one of the hardest holes on the course. Absolutely. You make a par and run out of there. The green plays shallow for the length of the hole, even though from the front left to the back left, it looks pretty big. There's kind of a falsish front on the front left. So it just plays shallow. And when you have that long a shot down a hill, it's hard to control that distance. And you know, controlling distance with a long shot's harder than with a wedge. And so you just don't have much depth to work with. That front bunker, it's deep, and it's just not an easy up and down from there. You watch guys hit bunker shots out of there, and you're like, oh, that wasn't that good. They just don't seem to get it close out of there as much as you'd think they would. If you hit it a little long, it's a pretty good back-to-front sloping thing from the back of the green. If you miss the green, and the green slopes that way as well, back-to-front. So it's tough to control the speed coming back. The front left pin, it looks wide open and simple, but you've got to hit it past it, and then you have a really tough putt. It's a hard green to putt across the green, and often with the right pin, you're putting across the green with a ton of break. And so, yeah, it's just that hole, you want to par and get out of there. You want to, in fact, if you told everybody they could have it one over for the tournament, they might take that. They probably would take that. Plus one for 4 days. Let's get out of there.
Yeah, there you go. That'd be the average score. Let's just jump, Bob, and you can take it from here. But
go ahead.
Let's jump. Let's parlay that into this collection of par threes at Augusta National, because I love that the fourth hole is the third cumulatively hardest hole. The fourth cumulatively hardest hole, by the way, you know I struggle to say that word, is 12. Golden Bell on the back nine, 155 yards is all, and yet it plays the fourth toughest hole in the tournament history. So last year, not as much. Last year, 12 was the 12th ranked most difficult hole, but overall it plays over par at 3.27. So you've got these two par threes that play difficult, and then you got 6 and 16 that are on the more easy, the 10th ranked and I think 16th ranked. Let's see, 16.
11th and 13th.
11th, there you go. For the cum is 11 and 13. Yep. What about this collection of par threes there at Augusta? And what makes those two specifically? We just talked about four, but 12 so difficult.
12, I mean, wow. Bob, if you were two shots behind and someone had to play one hole at Augusta with a 2-shot lead and you wanted them to make a double so you get in the playoff, would you send them to 12?
Yeah, of course you would.
It's either 11 or 12, right?
Yeah. That's what basically happened with Tiger in 2019. Those guys were standing there, they're playing a threesome, Tony Finau and the Italian, Francesco Molinari. He was leading the golf tournament, and Tiger hit it left of the bunker and into the middle of the green and had a 35 or 40 foot putt, and those guys beat it up.
Yeah, Tony and Frankie hit it.
Molinari. Yep.
So here's the thing that it's hard to recognize on television. So number 12, pretty much dead flat, as I recall, from tee to green. But the green is very shallow. I bet it, Bob, what do you think? I'd have to look at my book. I don't have it with me. But I think the center of the green where everybody says that's where you want to play, and that is where you want to play, that's only like 11 paces deep right there. It's not. Yeah. It's just a very shallow green. And then we've thrown in how for a right-hander, when you have a left-to-right sloping, when you have a left-to-right green with trouble short and right and trouble long and left, which is kind of what that hole has. The long left you can get away with to a degree, but the short right you can't get away with at all unless your name's Fred Couples. So you're going to miss the shot and pull it, which means long left, or you're going to block it and float it like Spieth did or Molinari. You just see it all the time. And it just, then you add in another problem with that hole is everybody knows the history. Everybody knows how you mess it up. Everybody knows, and you can't judge the distance. It's the wind is always a guess.
It swirls. Yep. It swirls.
Yeah, it absolutely does. How many times, Bob, have you been walking down number 11 and you can see the flag on 11 and then you look, 100 yards to the right maybe, and there's the flag on 12?
Yep.
Just a little deeper than 11 green, right?
Yep.
And they're facing each other, blowing at each other.
Yeah.
Or I got a great story for you, Caddy.
All the time.
So my dad's playing Augusta one of the first couple of times he's there. He had an old Augusta caddy. His name was Matthew Palmer. And they're playing in the tournament, and they get up on 12. And so my dad's asking him how far it was and what club he should hit and everything. And he says, hit that 7-iron. And my dad pulls the club out. He goes through his thing, and then he feels the wind, and he backs off a little bit. And the caddy says to him, just hit the 7-iron and hit it right now. And so we hit it and was able to knock it on the green. But like you said, it's situational, and it depends on where the wind's blowing. But the caddy, who had been there around so many times, as soon as he pulled it out of the bag and my dad backed off a little bit, he goes, hit it and hit it now.
Wow.
That's one of the great caddy calls I've ever heard. That's an outrageously good caddy call. That hole, I think I never one time, I caddied 8 Masters, and I don't remember one time watching a ball in the air and hearing anybody saying anything to it. Think about it. Because guys are like, get up or get down, right? You're just silent because you just have no idea where this thing's coming down. Even on days when there's no wind, you're just looking. Like, look, that left pin, when they put the tees up, you're hitting a 9-iron to it. It's so easy, right? But you're still just like, when it's in the air. It's just wild. It's wild.
So 6 and 16 are kind of similar in that they have those back right shelves and they got some slopes. So if the pin's not up on those shelves, you can use those to feed your shot down close to the hole. And that's why those two aren't necessarily ranked the toughest. But Bob, when it's back on that back right shelf on 6, you got to be careful.
Yeah, caddy, one year my dad hit it on number 6 and it was on the back shelf. Kind of, you know, they have a frontish pin on that back shelf and one that's a little bit further back. So my dad hits it up on the back shelf, walks all the way down the hill, back up, you know, and you walk around the green to the right and up the front of the green there on the right. And here came his ball rolling down off of the top shelf right past him. And he ends up making, I think, double on the hole. But it took that long for that ball, because it was right on the edge, to turn around and roll down right at his feet.
That back right shelf on six is just brutal. You just look, there's a lot of timing in golf that goes into success. Unfortunately, you time the wind right just by chance. You hit your best shot of the day the right distance. I mean, think about a benign hole. You hit a 7-iron in there. Or take number 11 at Augusta. Let's say you have a 7-iron into 11 and you're hitting a 7-iron on 6 that day. If you said, which shot would you want to hit just the right distance? Oh, I want to take the one on 6 because I can go 5 yards long or short on 11 and be just fine. But if I go 5 yards long or short on 6, I might be making double on that.
Yeah, just like
you described. So you need to time your good shot right on that hole. And that's, I mean, these guys are really good, but they don't hit it the same distance every time, every swing. And you hope you make your good swing on that tough pin, because there's no other play on 6 but to hit it the right distance on the right side of that green towards the back of the green. That's it. There's no other play. I mean, what else are you going to do? There's club selection, but there's no strategy on that pin. It's just, there's one place on the back right of that green where you hit every shot for either of those pins, and you just hope you hit a good shot.
Caddy, you're the best. Thanks for taking us through the golf course. Can't wait for the Masters. We'll be talking to you from the press building next week.
Thank you, gentlemen.
There you go. That's the caddy right here on Real Golf Radio. Stay tuned. The back nine's coming up next.